It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadani.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. And why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all a work in progress. I'm Rob Commodore. I'm your host. I'm also the author of the book Better Than You Think and co-author of the book Next Level Your Life. Today, I have a guest with me, Jamie Krakowski, if I pronounced that right.
Very good.
From Colorado, the beautiful Colorado Springs. I've been there before. Been there 2 years ago. Hiked 52 miles out there. It was awesome. But he's from Colorado Springs. He's been in a real estate business for 10 years. Married 25 this year, just passed his 25th wedding anniversary, has 4 kids, and he's a very successful realtor, served in the Army for 8 years, and we thank you for your service, Jamie.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
And thank you for being here today to share your story. Jamie's got a crazy story to share, and it's, you know, from the dark times he's doing awesome right now. He's got some good stuff to share. So, Jamie, thank you for being on the show today.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit. Take us back. Take us back to some of these, your early years that eventually led to the good stuff.
Yeah. So getting out of high school is kind of where I'll start, because the times before that were even worse, with divorced parents and foster care and all that kind of stuff. But I just had a really, really dark period in my life where after high school, I just couldn't find my path. And got into all the wrong things, drugs and alcohol and women and gang violence and all kinds of problems. And growing up in Fort Lauderdale most of my life, it was just that was kind of the norm. That's what you did. And for whatever reason, after graduation in high school, I decided that this was not the path that I wanted to go college-wise. And so got a job and started partying. Very, very difficult. Looking back at the, you know, at the time, it was a lot of fun, but looking back now, it was very, very bad times.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And so, and again, we don't have to get into too much detail, but you had some trouble. You said you lost your way, and you talked about the drugs, the girls and all that stuff. What you told me, there was a time when I think you got kicked out of your house.
Yeah. So my father and I got into it. You know, of course, my parents were divorced. I lived with my dad. My father and I got into it when I was 17, right after graduation. And I don't even remember what it was about at the time. I remember it hit me and telling me to get out of the house. And that was kind of my last day there. I moved, stayed with my girlfriend for a couple of days until I got an apartment, had a job. So I got an apartment. And then, I don't know, probably 6 months later, my girlfriend left me. I wasn't living the path that I should have been, of course, not living a great life. I had grown up Orthodox Jew, and so was bar mitzvahed and everything. And then I got away from God and religion and started this lifestyle.
Yeah. So then there was a time I think you had to, you took a nice little walk. If we could go there. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So I remember my mom, she sat me down. I had lost my job. The restaurant that I was working at got shut down for cocaine dealing on the Intercoastal. And so we went into work one day and went back the next day, and the place was boarded up, could not enter. And so I lost my apartment soon after that. And I remember I was at my mom's house. And she said, you know, I hate this path that you're on right now. If you don't stop what you're doing, you're going to die. And for whatever reason, I guess I took it to heart a little bit. She says, I want you to leave Florida and I want you to go hike the Appalachian Trail. And I was like, are you crazy? It's like, I'm not a hiker. I'm a city boy. I don't know anything about living out in the woods and the mountains. And she says, no, this is something that you need. A friend of mine did it as well. And they now live in Colorado, and they really loved it. And I was like, I'm not going to hike the Appalachian Trail. That's not even an option. And I remember about a week went by and I couldn't find a job and things weren't getting any better. And I took her up on the offer. She helped me get all my gear and boots and all that kind of stuff. And she bought me a plane ticket to Maine. I think I was in Bangor, Maine is where I flew into, which is Mount Katahdin, basically is the start of the Appalachian Trail when you're going southbound.
So that was, how old were you at that point, Jamie?
I was 20.
And were, I mean, if this is an appropriate way to say it, were you clean yet, or were you still in the party mode? Where were you there?
Still in party mode until the day I left.
Okay.
And so I know, yeah, you and I talked about that a little bit. You know, it was a very, very strange feeling to be basically kind of detoxing on my own in the middle of the woods. And I, you know, honestly, I was probably still high when I actually started the physical trail. I remember hiking up Mount Katahdin. I was out of shape, overweight, not doing well at all. It took me quite a few hours to get up to that top of the mountain. And then I just remember being up at the top of the mountain and just truly started having a conversation with God. And, you know, I talked to you kind of a little bit about that in our past conversations and how that was the start of this path that I've been on for the last 28 years now. I was probably sitting on that mountain for, I don't even know, 12 or 15 hours maybe. It was definitely overnight, and I was definitely having a conversation with God that entire time. And I remember heading back, putting my backpack on, heading back down the mountain. And I remember being clean. I didn't have any side effects of drugs or alcohol. Like, I was refreshed. I was completely clean. And that kind of started my path and the walk that I've done in my entire life now.
Yeah. So when your mom set you off to go on this hike on the Appalachian Trail, was it to walk from Maine to, I guess it goes all the way to what, Georgia or Florida, whatever it goes
to Georgia, Springer Mountain in Georgia.
Yeah. So you climbed that mountain that day. So how, like, what was the preparation? Like, I mean, you sit there, you're talking to your mom, you're storm party mode. She's sending you out on the trail. Was it the next day you were gone, or did you prepare for
a few days? Yeah. I mean, it wasn't long. And so no physical, actually, I think it was about a week. The only thing that I did is I drove out to the woods in Florida, in Central Florida, one day to set up my tent and all my camping gear and kind of figure out my stuff, right? Which I guess I could have done in the backyard of the house. But I remember doing that and then coming back home and having a plane ticket shortly thereafter.
So how long did you, was it days or weeks, or was it just that one time you were on the mountain for 12, 15 hours?
Oh, so I was on the mountain for, almost three and a half months, June, July, August to mid-September. So 3.5 months. I didn't finish the trail. I got hurt about halfway through, actually. I had to get off the trail at that time. And it was just heartbreaking. I had every intention of finishing the trail and getting down to Georgia, but obviously God had a different plan for me. And I had this, this injury to set me in the path that I needed to be put on, I guess.
Yeah. I think you told me, like, you got hurt and you called your mom and she wasn't going to help you, was she?
Well, she said, "You're not coming back to Florida." And I was like, "Well, where am I going to go?" She's like, "Well, I've got some friends that live out in Colorado, the ones that hike the Appalachian Trail. Why don't you go live out there with them? You can do some handyman work and kind of figure out your ways and figure out what you want to do." And I'm like, "I've never been to Colorado. I don't know what's in Colorado." And so sure enough, she bought me a one-way bus ticket to Pueblo, Colorado. And that's where, and my friends picked me up at the bus stop, or my mom's friends. I had never met them before. And they lived in Westcliff. So I got there September 9th, 1995, and just started kind of working with them that week and kind of figuring out some handyman stuff and doing those kinds of things. And then we decided to go camping and hunting that weekend. Well, I'd never been hunting before, hardly been camping ever in my life, except for the Appalachian Trail. And so I was like, "All right, I'll go hunting and camping with you guys and check it out." So we went up to Greenhorn Mountain, which is up in the San Isabel Range. And that's where I met my wife, my current wife, September 15th, 1995.
Wow. That's great. That's great that you're sharing that. So if I can unpack this a little bit. So you get that ticket to, would you say, Bangor, Maine, I think it was. Yeah. And are you kicking and screaming? Are you fighting a little bit? Are you bitter at your mom? Or did you like, okay, I'm too high to even worry about it. Let me just get started.
No, I think there was probably something in me that was like, yeah, I need to stop this lifestyle. It's time to make a change.
Yeah.
I think I came to that realization at that time.
So then you start to hike. Like, how far into the hiking or the trail were you when you had that 14-hour conversation with God?
Oh, that was it was like the first day. It was literally the very first day.
Wow.
I don't remember how long it took me to get to the top of Katahdin. I just remember primarily being up there and then starting the path down. But I remember being miserable trying to climb this mountain. And it, you know, it's a trail. It's not like I'm climbing a mountain with ropes, right?
Right.
But I just remember it being just tremendously difficult and just absolutely miserable to get to the top.
What time of the year was that? Was it fall, spring?
It was in June.
It was in June?
Yeah, so it was hot and humid and I'm overweight and out of shape and it was just miserable.
And you had the camping gear, like a tent, you packed a tent and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. The whole backpack full.
So you have that 14-hour conversation. I mean, obviously, you don't have to get too personal about it, but like, what's a 14-hour conversation with God like?
You know, I don't remember the whole thing, but I remember parts of, I need to live a more righteous life. I need to stop acting the way that I was. I needed to stop the behaviors that I was going through. Everything that happened in the past can be forgiven, and you just need to live a better life moving forward.
So you do all that in 14 hours. So you walk down the mountain and you felt refreshed. So that's like day one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was day one and two, basically.
Yeah, right. So now you said you were on the mountain for like 3.5 months. So what was the next 3 months and 6-10 days like? Was it just reflection? Was it
hiking every day, reflection, some days of depression and anxiety and a lot of days on why the heck am I out here right now doing this? And a lot of days of true understanding what that purpose was and the opportunity to get my life together.
When you're doing that and you said you had these up, like, it sounded like it was some ups and downs. Did you have a journal with you?
No, I didn't have a journal with me. I wish I did. I wasn't a journaler then. It would have been amazing to recount all the conversations I had with God and myself throughout that time.
Do you ever go back now and reflect on those conversations?
You know, I haven't, not in the first 25 years, but since talking to you, I had a couple of those thoughts. I think we
have you really?
That's well, good. I think we connected, what, about 2 years ago now? So,
yeah.
So it's been kind of entertaining to kind of reflect back on those times and, you know, what that meant for me in my current situation.
Yeah. And you've done very well. And for those, I didn't mention it, but obviously Jamie's a realtor and a lot of the guests that we've had on here have been realtors and we've all met through this Buffini organization, Buffini company. Yeah. And we've met at I guess it was in San Diego or was it Arizona we met?
Years and years ago, but I know like we have really started talking about this chiseled at peak, I think 2 years ago.
Yeah. So it's been an interesting ride. So those 3 months of those conversations, those ups and downs. Yeah. So you finish the walk, you get hurt, you finish the walk, and you're like, was it like, mom, she gave a one way ticket to Pueblo, Colorado. You're working with, I think you said friends or relatives. Yeah. Are you still like, what am I doing and where am I going?
I mean, that was just that first week. So I was just kind of riding the horse at that point. I mean, there wasn't really much going on, just trying to figure out what I was going to do to survive. If I hadn't met Bianca that very first weekend I had moved to Colorado, I don't know what would have been different. But kind of meeting her and starting our life together, it just kind of took all of that away. I mean, I don't know what she saw in me. I had no job, no house. I didn't have any major things to give. I guess she just saw the soul of who I am, and that's kind of what caught it. I guess what got it going.
I'm just throwing this out there. Maybe she saw hope. Maybe she saw
maybe. Yeah. She also had some troubles in her life earlier, and I think we were a good fit. Yeah. Obviously, I mean, we're almost together 30 years now, so something obviously worked.
Something worked right? Yeah. So how's your relationship with God manifested since then?
It's been pretty consistent. I have, I'm not very religious, so I haven't particularly taken toward one religion or another. I've became much more spiritual in my life and paying attention to the signs that are around me. And like I said, continuing to walk the path that's been put before me, pray on a very, very regular basis. I can't say I talk to God on a regular basis now, but, or that he or she talks to me, but, I know I pray, and I know that, I have to assume and feel that whoever up there is listening, and, we just keep doing what we do, you know?
Yeah. And so you said that you keep walking the path that's been put in front of you. What's that path look like right now?
It changes from day to day sometimes, of course. In this business, you kind of never know what's going to happen, right? So we've just had so many blessings in our life. I had a great military career that was unfortunately cut short. I had a brain tumor in 2012. Again, I believe that the path before me was predetermined and set, and I wouldn't be where I'm at today, of course, if those things didn't happen. And so unfortunately, after multiple deployments and a good career, I had a different path in mind than what I was going to do in the military. And I never anticipated that I would actually get out of the military. So 2014, I medically retired from the military after surgery and recovery. And got my real estate license, of course, right after that. But in that meantime, we have three amazing children, biological children, 26, 24, and 20. And then, of course, we just adopted Avi 3 years ago, and he's just been incredible. So, you know, 17-year gap between our kids, but we make it work.
And tell us a little bit about that, because that's when I kind of – when I met you, I think you were going through the process of the adoption, right?
I think when we met at Peak that year, we had just got him a couple of weeks prior. We didn't have Peak that year. It was COVID year.
Yeah.
So I know we had talked soon after that, but yeah, so he was born May 29th, 2020. Right in the middle of COVID. We had to fly to Arizona and figure out hotels and all kinds of problems. Arizona was not very good to visit during COVID. And so we got all that figured out though. And he was born. And my wife was able to go in for the delivery. So she was actually able to cut the cord.
Wow.
And be there for the delivery. And then the birth mom had asked for him to be removed right away. And so Bianca and Avi got to bond in their own room together. And it was just a very, very special time, an incredible blessing for Bianca to be able to have that time with him. And then 5 days later, we were able to bring him home. And so it was very, very stressful. Lots of attorneys. We had to have a team of attorneys in Arizona and a team of attorneys in Colorado. It was a very expensive adoption for it being an uncontested private adoption. But we didn't care. And he has been just such a tremendous addition and blessing to the family. He's just incredible.
That's awesome, man. Thank you for sharing that. I got to ask you, you got, you know, children, 26, 24 and 20. And then there's people probably saying, what possessed you to adopt at this point?
I know. So, you know, I mean, you're presented with opportunities and you have to pray on it and decide if it's right for you. And this is another moment of talking to God when I was praying about what to do about Avi. Bianca was a little bit more of an immediate yes. And I was more of an immediate no. and so I was like, you know, I'm going to be 65 years old when this kid graduates high school. You know, I'm not a young chicken anymore. Right. So, I prayed on it for a few weeks, and I do remember I was sitting on my bed in my bedroom, and God told me, you are being selfish at all the reasons that you're thinking of not doing this adoption. And they were silly things like, can't go camping as much, can't go on the boat as much, can't go travel as much. You know, I mean, just in the big picture, in the big scheme of things, those things don't really matter, right? And so he just said, you're being selfish. You need to make the decision to adopt this child and basically save him from the life he might have had. And the next morning, I decided to move forward with it, and we hired the attorneys.
Wow, that's incredible. But yeah. What was it like? Was there a thought process that said, like, hey, we should adopt the child? Or, like, because again, it's been 17 years difference there. What, I mean, the gap.
Yeah. So, 2015 or 2016, we decided we wanted to have another child. And so, my wife had had a hysterectomy. My wife had had her tubes tied back when our third child was born. And so, of course, we needed to do in vitro. So we kind of started that process. And the month that she was supposed to start her injections, she had a hemorrhaging period and had to have an emergency hysterectomy.
Wow.
And so, again, that was just God's sign that maybe we just weren't meant to have any more children down the path. Of course, we see that that was so that we could bring Avi into our life. And so it really, truly at that time we were done, that we said, okay, this was God's sign that we're not supposed to have any more children. So not knowing what was going to happen in 2020, of course, she had to have, unfortunately, that hysterectomy, and that was the end of us having another biological child.
Yeah. So then how did it end up, like, Avi, how did he come into your life? In other words, did you know somebody that was, didn't.
Yeah. So we had done foster care for years. We felt it was very important to give back to the community as best we could. We had lots and lots of children through our house over the years. And a mother of another foster mother that we had met probably 10 years prior had said, hey, my sister is pregnant with her fifth child and she doesn't want it. Are you guys interested? So she actually sent us a picture of the ultrasound picture that day. And that's when I was like, oh, heck no, I'm done. I'm not having any more children. And that's how kind of that whole process started. So we flew out to Arizona, met with birth mom, kind of came up with a plan, figured out really how to get it all done, and got that plan in place and got everything figured out.
Wow. So when we talked last, I don't remember you telling me that you fostered children. How many children have you fostered over the years?
I think we had 16 or 17 kids through our house.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible. And you made the comment, you said, give back to the community. Like, what were you giving back in terms of, like, just helping kids with family life?
Really, just making sure that children could have some sense of normalcy, a family life for the transitional period that they were in.
And when you foster a child, are they there a year, 6 months, 2 years? How long do you usually
there? All different. Some longer term, some short term.
Wow. So, and what was the inspiration to do that? I'm like, sometimes I know a lot of facts before I get on a podcast, everybody, and I'm finding some stuff out now. This is great.
You know, I think we both came from broken homes. Mm-hmm. And so we really wanted to make sure that we provided normalcy in our family, of course. But then, like I said, just a sense of giving back to those kids that were in a terrible transitional period, maybe broken homes or drugs or whatever it may be, and just kind of give them some normalcy for however long they needed it. It was a very difficult time for us, but it was a very rewarding time.
When you say difficult, because it's, I mean, you didn't have 17 kids at one time, right?
Oh, no, not at all. But we did have, we had five or six at one time once.
What kind of age ranges?
From 3 to 17, like all.
Really?
Yeah.
So you said it was hard, but how fulfilling was it?
It was tremendous. You know, the opportunity to serve others is, you know, I think where my heart is. And it really just lined up with my beliefs.
Wow. Man, that's impressive. And I'm inspired right now by that. It's
because
look, I mean, you hear all these stories of kids going through, you know, troubled times, and whether it's trafficking, whether it's just broken homes, or just the negligence from, you know, maybe parents that just don't want to be parents, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And for you, one, you have your older children, now you have Aviv, and in between you had all these foster kids. I mean, God, you've had an impact on some people, man.
I hope so. I really think I'd like to say I've had an impact on a lot of people's lives over the last 25, 28 years.
Yeah, I got to ask this question. When you're fostering all those children, like, how were your other children adapting to that?
You know, I think it really created a lot of good personal growth and development for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Even though our life was not perfect by any means. I was military, I was gone a lot, you know, things are difficult. But I believe it created a sense of giving back to your community for them as well. And an understanding that there's enough to share for everybody. And, you know, we weren't millionaires by any means. And you don't really make a lot of money doing foster care. That's not the purpose of doing it. I think it just really showed to our children that there's other things for us to do on this earth.
Yeah.
And it's not just about like who we are in our immediate family, but what we can do for those and others around us.
Yeah, you definitely exemplify that. That's incredible. Now, are you allowed to stay in touch with those children?
No, not typically. And we tried, one of our kids, we tried to stay in touch with for some time. And we did have some communication with him just recently, within like the last year, but nothing since. And, you know, it's a little bit more difficult, especially once the families start to get kind of reintroduced. You're pretty much out of the loop by then.
Is that right? Wow. So, any more foster are going to come from the, you're done.
Yes, sir, I'm done.
So thank you for sharing all that. So, I mean, let me ask you this. You had that 14-hour conversation with God on the mountain that first day you're there.
Yep.
Have you had any more of those 14-hour conversations with God?
I haven't.
Yeah.
I don't think it's because I haven't tried. I think it's because I haven't needed it.
Uh-huh.
As much as I needed it that first day.
Yeah. Well, and look, I don't think I've ever had one 14-hour long conversation
with anybody, right?
Yeah. I mean, that says a lot there. But I'm assuming you have periodic, intermittent conversations with him.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah.
So when he's answering, when he's talking to you, what do you like? Do you hear a voice? Is it a feeling? Is it the spirit? What do you get? Like me, I get these feelings when I know God's talking.
Same as well. Yeah. And like, I'm getting chills right now just thinking about it. It's a feeling. It's spiritual. It's not so much a voice. I'm not crazy. I'm not hearing things.
Yeah.
But I do feel like it's more of a feeling that you get that somebody, you do feel like somebody is answering you though. It's just sometimes you don't hear the words, right? I mean, it's just, sometimes it's just a feeling. It's just an acknowledgement that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and that this is the right thing to be doing at this time or the right path. Or, you know, I believe when we pray on some of the things that we pray on, I believe they're answered in the activities that follow afterwards, not necessarily by some kind of verbal answer. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes total sense to me. Yeah.
So, I believe it's definitely more of a spiritual thing than an actual word telling me what to do.
Now, do you bring any of these conversations to your team? Like, do they know this? Your whole military career, does all that come into the real estate business?
They know a lot of it. They've seen some of my videos and stuff like that and telling my stories in other places. So yeah, they know some of this stuff.
Yeah. And I'm assuming you've gained some the utmost respect for the path you've traveled.
Or a couple of crazy conversations, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So that's great. So before we let you go here, I got to ask, like, how much you've done a lot. You've been chiseled. You've been chiseled a lot, right? So
I try.
Yeah. How much more chiseling you got going on in your life?
Well, I've got 25 more pounds to lose. So that's one part of being chiseled. You know, I'm pretty big, but I've got a little bit of weight to lose. I'm always looking for what's next for me. And so we've just been given some opportunity to start our own brokerage. within the KW system. So we're working on that. Always growing the team, always recruiting. We've had a very, very successful year where other agents are really suffering. And I hate to say that, but not everybody is doing so great around the system that I hear. We actually are up this year compared to others. So it's been a tremendous blessing. You know, as you know, I'm all about giving back to my team now. So it's about how I can make my agents' lives better and those that are around me. It's not just about the bottom dollar. It's about changing people's lives. And so I'm constantly striving to do that every day and finding new ways that I can nurture them and help them with their lives while still making sure that I'm feeding my own life and, you know, taking care of ourselves. We're doing really, really well. I'm very, very happy with the direction of the team and business and everything right now.
Good for you, man. Good for you. If I can ask, like, how does I hear, okay, I'm giving back to my team. Is it the soul, Jamie? Is it the knowledge, Jamie? Is it the mentor, Jamie? Is it the coach, Jamie? How do you get back to your team?
It's really all of them. I want to make sure that I'm fulfilling their lives in the way that their lives need to be fulfilled, not the way that I think their lives need to be fulfilled. I think sometimes as team leaders, we put unfair expectations on some of our agents. You got to make 100 calls a day. You've got to close 25 transactions a year. Well, maybe your agent doesn't want to close 25 transactions a year. Maybe their why is different than what you are expecting, you know, your expectation of them is. And so making sure that I fill those needs and learning and understanding what my agent's needs are and those around me, not just that work for me, but, you know, those that work with me. It's about fulfilling their needs. And if their needs are to make $50,000 a year and live a great life and be home every night for dinner and support their family, then that's what we train towards. If they have bigger aspirations, whether it's $250,000 a year or 25 transactions or whatever it seems to be for them, that's kind of what we train towards. And I've, you know, been utilizing the Buffini network and systems and organizations for the last 8 years. And I've loved every single day of it. And so just making sure that we're five circle fit and pouring into them as much as possible. That's what we do.
Yeah. And you just mentioned something that you got to tell the audience this, but what does five circle fit mean?
So everyone always asks me, I can't remember what all five categories are. Right. But
I'd give them to you.
What is it? Personal,
spiritual,
personal, financial,
business and education.
Business and education. So,
well, I should say it's family. It's spiritual, family, business or education, financial, and then personal.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Right. So whatever those circles are for them, and so that they overlap and, in, you know, and have a whole life, that's what we train towards. For me, I'm God, family, self, and then business. And for most of my agents, they're the same. But you know, some have higher financial aspects and desires. And so we really coach and mentor to make sure that we're making them five circle fit.
There you go. Good job. So look, Jamie, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you in the beautiful Colorado Springs, how would they get a hold of you?
Cell phone's best, 719-231-9544. Or you can call my admin, Courtney, 719-249-2905. One of us will always answer the phone. We're not one of those agents that waits 3 days to call you back. So extras, great.
Can we find you on Facebook, Instagram, any of the social media?
Oh, yeah, we're everywhere. We're on every social media platform, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, at the Krakowski team. So
there you go. Well, Jamie, I'm blessed to have had the opportunity to talk. I'm inspired for sure. I'm from a big family myself, one of seven kids. So I love the big family thing. So that was really cool to learn today while we were chatting. And I just appreciate you, buddy. And I'm glad we met a few years back and then we continue to grow our relationship. So thank you so much for being here.
You as well. I appreciate it too.
Well, thank you, Jamie. And thank you everybody for listening. Until next time, everybody, let's go get chiseled.
See ya.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pomodoro. Be sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than Equal.